Sci-Fi Party Line. Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me Carl.
What's happening, Kat?
Spoilers, we are about to discuss The Airbender. Wait, The Last Airbender, or is it Avatar Bending with Air? Look, what's the damn title?
It's called The Last Windbreaker. That is what this movie should have been called.
This movie has so many titles. You can't call it Avatar because of the blue people last year. You say Last Airbender and it's like a mouthful. And then he's not even like, whatever.
I'm gonna go with Airbender for short. How's that? Let's do that.
Yeah, let's go Airbender. Well, yeah, no, I was just being funny. I know the name of the movie. But I was just complaining about the length of the title. But that has nothing to do with M. Night. He didn't choose the title. That is what the title is called from the cartoon. Did you, by chance, ever catch the cartoon of The Last Airbender?
The thing is, a lot of my friends watch it. I've seen one or two episodes of the cartoon, and it was okay. I'm not a tremendous fan. I don't know the history of it, which is probably a bad thing because, well, maybe it's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing.
Because the fans of the cartoon series have a degree of outrage from what has occurred, that because I don't have the history attached to it, that perhaps it's somewhat muted, but that's, I've only seen one or two.
Let's talk about a little bit of that controversy with this movie. It's a movie by M. Night. Now, he, you know, comes pre-packaged with controversy most of the time, or maybe disappointment, not controversy. But this movie had controversy because of the casting. The casting, it's an American-made Japanese film or cartoon. I'm not sure, or is it just it's Japanese? Okay. And people were a little outraged at the casting because you cast everything from Indian to Caucasian. There were, you know, some Asians in there as well, but it was a whole I guess cornucopia of people,
well,
or races.
I didn't have a problem with that.
I didn't.
I think having a variety of people in the film, there's nothing wrong with that. However, the airbender, whose name was, if I'm not mistaken, Aang.
A-A-N-G.
Aang, yes, yes. Typically not the Wisconsin guy you'd think of when you have a person named
Aang. Guess what? He is from Dallas, Texas.
Are you trying to help here? What does that mean?
I just thought it was just, it's not an improvement, but I just thought it was hilarious to find out that Noah Ringer, is from Dallas, Texas.
That sounds just about right, I'd say. I like seeing a variety of people in the cast. But I also like to see people somewhat in the vicinity of who the part was written for, playing the
part.
But
he has a look to him. He was very cute. His little cheeks were so cute. He was just very adorable. He was bright-eyed. He was mostly believable. I mean, some of the movements weren't on par with what you'd see, you know.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Let's just cut to the chase here. What did you like this movie?
You know, I feel the same way about this movie that I felt about Lion Witch and the Wardrobe. It felt the same. It's a kid's movie. It's a children's movie, and it's not my cup of tea. I'm not sure that I'd see, you know, the second and third or whatever type of trilogy.
They're not going to be any more of these. This was the last Airbender. There won't be any more.
How are you sure? That it was a cliffhanger ending.
Oh, just because it was a cliffhanger does not mean they will make more. I am fairly certain that when they see the box office returns, maybe M. Night won't be involved in it. If they have a sequel, chances are M. Night will not be involved. They will find another crew to try to patch it
together. Where are you getting this from?
No, I'm just saying. It's just, it's not, Well, okay, so you're saying that you thought the movie was
well, like, if I didn't know anything about the, you know, call of racism, because that not only did they say that the casting was bad because they had Caucasians in the roles where there should have been Asians, but also they said they were complaining about dark-skinned people being evil, and they didn't like that, which I thought was a little weird because M. Night is dark-skinned, and he maybe didn't cast them to be... I don't know. It was a ridiculous claim to me.
I just like the people to look like who they're supposed to be. I mean...
But are you stereotyping then, Carl?
No. I just mean based on the series. If when they had a certain sets of people...
Arthur Dent.
Yeah?
Was black. He was most deaf in the recent Hitchhiker's Guide. Not a lot of people was into that.
Well, yeah.
It was fun on one hand, but then when you saw him, it was like, I don't know.
I thought it was an interesting choice with him, but I don't think that he added to the movie. I don't think the fact that it was most deaf or that it was a black guy added anything to the movie, which is unfortunate, really.
We're off the tracks.
All right. Well, look, this was not the worst movie I've ever seen, so I can come out and boldly say that. However, I have seen some really, really awful movies, The scale might be a little skewed when it comes to me. But
scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5.
Oh,
let's go 1 to 5.
Well, 1 to 5. 2.
Yeah. I'd go 2. Mm-hmm. If I'm drinking a little beer right now, I might go 2.5.
Well, okay, let's just, what did you like about the film then? I mean, you thought
I thought Aang was cute. I thought the characters that they did cast, had an adorable thing to them, you know, if you want to, like, oh, okay, you know, this is a little chick. The girl, Katara.
Yeah.
Her acting was a little, too Disney and a little, okay, not good at all. Sure. Sometimes Aang will be speaking and then, like, Aang, let's go. And I was just like, what was that? Because it was so off. It was like somebody held up a cue card and I'm acting here in a movie. And
that's the way I felt about everybody in this movie.
Really?
I felt the whole dialogue, everybody had a stilted kind of, it was a Star Wars episode one.
Yeah.
Kind of feel to it, where it was unnatural. It was like it was wooden and red, and people would, okay, you and I, Karen, on this phone, I mean, this conversation here, we interrupt each other occasionally, we talk over each other sometimes. Never happened in the movie. It was like everyone had a very specific box that they must speak in. And here's the other thing that I didn't think would bother me. I've teased sci-fi movies in the past that aliens and people from other worlds always have to have a British accent. You know, they've always got to sound like, good to let us know they're alien or they're ancient or something like that. I'm serious. These kids sound like they just grabbed them out of the mall. Everybody sounded like people that are just hanging around. And that bothered me. Yes. I couldn't believe it. These people are supposed to come from different parts of the planet, or, you know, whatever the airbender world.
People was sort of British. They had, because Asif Manvi, which really totally distracted me because I couldn't stop laughing because I'm giggling. He's on The Daily Show cracking jokes. He's a comedian, and here he is the serious bad guy. And every time he'd do a little thing with his voice, I'd be like, you know, because I'm laughing about. Thinking about some of the, you know, stand-up that he's done on The Daily Show, and I couldn't get past him.
Yeah.
But he was good. I would like, focus, this is not awesome. This is not awesome. And then he'd say something weird, and I was like, he's about to laugh. I see it. And it was just...
I don't know. I couldn't... I thought the dialogue was very stilted. And yeah, you're right. I forgot that a couple of the folks that had a slight darker hue, had a slight accent to them. But still, it just didn't feel natural. It didn't have, like, the scope, the broadness that you would expect people from all over the planet who've never known each other, you know, supposed to be coming together after battles and separation.
This is a fictitious world. How do you know they do that?
What? How do you know they do what? Have accents?
And do stuff different. You might be thinking about it too hard. Maybe on planet Airbender. Mm-hmm. Bender. That they do this. Okay, yeah, that's weak. That's weak.
I'm just yeah.
Yeah, that's
just,
weak. I was trying. Yeah.
But it so all right. So that kind of bugged me. All right. Here's another thing I had an issue with. What'd you think of the fight scenes?
Wow. Crickets. Yeah. Well, I don't even know how to put it in a very nice way.
You don't have to put it in a nice way. We're looking for honesty here, people.
They were very. I could do that. Like I was like, oh my god, I could totally do Tai Chi and move freaking fire. You know, I was.
If you are amped to watch a Tai Chi throwdown, then this was the movie for you. I mean, the battles. Were so slow. I mean, by the time they were done with their dance to, you know, incarnate the force spell, whatever it is they're about to throw, you could have just walked away.
They would just stand there for, so they did all this fancy flare thing. And I was like, if it was Americans in this movie, they'd be like Indiana Jones, pull out the gun and get them.
Were there no guns in the world of Airbender here?
American style, just like, ooh, they doing all this frilly stuff. Let me just run up and punch this person in the face because, hey, we don't do that.
We could have taken these people out with an axe. It was so slow. And then the resulting force, you know, they'd spend about 20 minutes doing their dance. Yeah. And then a globe of water would creep towards the person that they were about to take out. You know what it was like? Okay. The old Final Fantasy game, Final Fantasy, used to have this turn-taking kind of gameplay, right? Yeah. Modern games, everybody's just shooting and cutting loose in simultaneous battle. But no, old Final Fantasy had this sort of, you would say, fireball, and then you would wait for the boss, you know, and then the boss would play, and water tentacle, and then you'd have to hit, you know, like plus three left hit, and then you count. Now, that may be fun for, you know, gameplay strategy, but watching it in the movie, it was just glacial.
Yeah, it was miserable,
Okay, so you had turn-taking with the fighting, you had turn-taking with the dialogue. This was not smooth. It did not feel natural. It did not flow. Okay, here's the other thing. So, or the one battle scene I thought was actually kind of cool. It's when the outcast prince had broken into the
with his Shaka Khan hair.
Oh, wasn't that rocking? All right, see, he had his mask on and he's battling the guy for a moment. You know, he and Airbender were back to back, and there was a slight naturalness to the fighting going on. And when I say slight, I mean more than one person hit someone at a time. You know, it was like two dudes ganged up on him. So I was going, all right. You know, at this point, I'm going, all right, this is actually something's going to happen.
I know what you're
going
to say.
And all right, they just about have him, as in all good movies, when the heroes are down. The bad guys say, wait, everyone pull back. And so Airbender and the prince go running across this long bridge. Now, they have been doing their kung fu. They've been throwing lightning bolts. They've been throwing water and stuff all around, taking out like 20 dudes in their, you know, best battle they could do. They get all the way across the bridge. And then the guy says, all right, get him. Did they hit him with a rock? What was that? All the way across the bridge. Now, think about it. They have been fighting for three solid minutes, 20 dudes at a time. They took turns. They run across the bridge, and then one guy with a rock takes them out. Where was he before?
Well, I think he had to get outside of the gates for the whole rock trajectory. Yeah, I think he had to do that.
Rock trajectory. That's what it was. And that was the good battle, people. That's what I'm saying. That was the good one out of this. Yeah. No. This movie had a classic M. Night flow to it where.
M. Night flow to it.
Where it had all of this build up and you were getting, you know, trying to learn about the past, the legacies of these people and all this stuff. There's a confrontation, a big buildup between the bad guys and the good guys. And then nothing at the end. Nothing. It just flattened out.
No, it's, well, no, because he had to come to terms with being the Avatar, and he did his little dance, and he actually bow? He kind of bowed, and then he looked up, and he did a little whatever, and then it kind of ended with him, oh, you know, redemption, and he's going to stand up and do it for his shiny-headed monk guy that he got killed because he was a coward the other time. And then it ended on a cliffhanger with this crazy sociopathic sister who's going to...
What I'm talking about within this episode, yes, you're right, it did end with a pseudo cliffhanger. I mean, cliffhanger would imply that you're interested in what's going to happen next, but it did end with a pseudo cliffhanger. But I'm talking about the battle at, you know, Water Helm's Deep, okay?
That's exactly what it was.
No, it was not exactly that.
But I'm just saying, I was thinking, I was like, all battles from now on always look like Helm's Deep. All of them. Look, well, it looked like a fake ass Helm's Deep.
Helm's Deep,
and like,
oh, the guys are standing on the wall, and you got like 8, 10, was it elves and humans deep on there? They're standing up there, and they're ready for battle. And then you got the orcs all sliming up against the wall. This, they knew the ships were coming. They were able to rally the entire force of the water, you know, the water people, waterbenders or whatever. They get up to the fence. 7 dudes on the fence. They had sticks. All right, they just standing there. Iron ships throwing flames are approaching. 7
Those ships were
not. Sticks are on. Yeah, the ships were all rocking. I mean, just that was like.
Well, we'll get to the good part later, but yeah, I didn't quite get, because like when the snow started turning to ash, or ash started falling from the sky, they was like, what is going on? I don't know what's going. And I was like, really. Really? Have you even prepared for battle at all? I mean, what?
You remember the old lady in the courtyard with the bucket? Now, the ships have pulled up at the front. You got the 7 dudes with the stakes on the bridge. And there's like a lady mopping in the middle of the town when all of a sudden the fire people show up. She's like, oh, where did they come from? Oh, that was ridiculous. Yeah, but then again, they put all their warriors on that, you know, one little line on the fence. So maybe that's what
she
was
just
going on.
Needed to finish up some stuff right quick.
She needed to get the heck out of there.
She wasn't worried about that. Well, the movie had, it wanted to be epic.
Yes.
It wanted to be epic, and there were some gorgeous scenes. Like, I like that hovering, never-ending story buffalo thingy that floated.
That was ridiculous. That was so ridiculous.
I thought Apple was going to get killed, and I was going to be upset, because I'm like, why were you going to kill the flying bison? Come on. You didn't like Appa? He had the little hair. His little hair moved, and he looked like great animation. It was great animation. The fire ships looked phenomenal. They were menacing. They
I love
had
fire
the,
ships.
Yeah, they. I the like costumes. The I was making the costumes in my head. You know, when I do that, I like the costumes. I mean, because you had Katara and Sokka. They looked like they were Eskimos, or
yes,
you know.
Yes.
And the costuming was, it was great, but, and some of this, it was filmed in Greenland and Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. And so, it was pretty, it was framed well.
That's M. Night. He can make stuff look good, no doubt.
Well, were you at least satisfied with that?
Well, there was one other problem. In order to watch it in its full airbendedness, I saw it in 3D.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't bother.
Well, so when I watched it, because again, I wanted to give it the best possible experience. So I've heard that when you watch certain movies in 3D, that things look darker. Something about the effect doing the effect look darker. Maybe if I had seen it in non-3D, things would have felt a little brighter and a little crisper. But okay, here's one thing. I'm watching a movie, got my 3D glasses on. My phone falls out of my pocket. All right, so I take the glasses off to rummage under the seat to get the phone. And I get the phone, and I turn and look at the screen, crystal clear. All right, my glasses are not on. I'm looking at this, implying no 3D effect whatsoever. And I'm saying, look. what am I paying for here? I'm sitting, I'm looking, and I'm waiting, and you know, after a couple of minutes, then something got blurry, and I put them on real quick. But the use of 3D in this
It was 3D
film,
after the fact. That's, if you hear about movies who get 3Ds after the fact, you don't see them in 3D. 3D movies that aren't like Avatar, you had to see it in 3D, unless you didn't see the movie at all. This thing is like Clash of the Titans, where I'm not sure if it's after the fact. Somebody correct me on this if I'm wrong. But it's like not intended for, but they kind of half-assed made it at the end. It's the best way I can describe it, which is sad. But
I'd say every 8 minutes, you would see something that would imply.
I already heard that you shouldn't bother with the 3D on this.
I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, I was lukewarm going in here. You know, I'd heard all the reviews, so I was properly prepared. My expectations were low.
Well, right, but because this is the movie that we made a blood pack on.
Blood pack! Blood pack! Yeah,
Carl, let me tell you, Carl was trying to get out of this movie. He was trying to break the pack, and
attention, listening audience, never make a blood pack with Kat.
Oh, I hold you to your word. Word
calling me up. Are you at the theater? Are you going? You sure you're going? All right, woman. Dang, I'm going.
He's like, Carl, you could have said, why would you want to back out of this? You brought it up. You kept on bringing it up.
I was talking about it.
Screw it. I'm going to see it because this dude talking about a blood pack and all this crap. I'm going to see this film because I'm curious now.
I was joking with you. I was joking. This is satire.
I don't do it. Well, yeah, I don't do that well. I don't do that. If you're going to say something like, oh, okay, you know, because I'm a simple Texas girl.
Oh,
you
got
to joke with me. I don't do that. Okay, but... well, you know, there the main thing about this movie, I guess, yeah, you can kind of argue, but there was no M. Night trick at the end.
Well, other than the fact it had no real ending. So, here's what I'm saying.
No, but you know, it's like the signs with the water where you went off on a tirade about that thing. And then, you know, a Sixth Sense and the real surprise. And there's, you know, all these other weird surprises that could kind of suck the life out of the movie or, you know, give you wow factor. But this one, it was just a straightforward movie that didn't really have any tricks in it.
It wasn't a full trick, but I will say this. Again, the whole movie, you're watching the airbender develop his skills. He's trying to get more powerful so he can unite the people. The end of the movie, he gets his big opportunity, okay? He's mastered, he's almost mastered water now. He's got the air down. He's ready. You got the fire ships at the bay. He brings up the massive tidal wave. The tidal wave, which you could, you know, devastate the troops. He could just wash everybody away. What does he do with the tidal wave?
He was supposed to give a show of power, not kill people. That was the point.
That was lame. I'm going to bring what was like a quarter mile high tidal wave and then gently push the ships away. I mean,
but what's better? I mean, what's better to like be a peacock and show off and talk as much crap as you can and show a force of power or, you know, let people know I can kill you with my brain, but I'm not.
Yeah, now see, that's an M. Night ending, though, right there, because he wasn't saying, I can kill you with my brain when he was beating dudes up at Helm's Deep and when he was trying to get the kid out.
No, bald-headed sexy monk was like, you got, oh, no, it wasn't bald-headed sexy. It was Dragon from Merlin who told him, you watch that, don't you? I just caught you.
Yeah, okay. Well,
with the absence, I wish John Hurt was in. Anyway, Dragon told him not to hurt anybody. He wasn't supposed to kill anybody. He was just supposed to.
Which, by the way, totally felt like Merlin. It was like it was ripping off Merlin.
That's why I thought about that. It's John Hurt. I mean, it even sounded like John Hurt. Anyway, that was the point, Carl. I mean, it has honor, which, you know, you like to back out of honor because you like to break blood packs. And
maybe this didn't work. I was joking. I also said Step Up 3D would be the hit of the summer. I was joking, all right? But...
Oh, really? Well, I got that one.
Oh, thanks, Grace.
I don't do well with sarcasm because I like, partially pay attention anyway. Come on, dude. Don't do me like that.
Fine. We done this now. So let's finish. Oh, man.
Well, you know...
Go on, yeah.
Well... one other thing that I liked about this movie is that, is this like the first science fiction film where there was a massive Indian cast?
Well, that's interesting.
Because I was thinking about that. You had lots of Indian people. You had the guy from Slumdog Millionaire. You had Asif Manvi. And I was a little impressed with that. Was it a cheat because M. Night is in? Is he? Yeah, he's
no.
What is he? I don't know what he is.
I'm pretty sure he's Indian. But the thing is, again, because it's M. Night, I have no doubt he can make good looking stuff. All right, I had no problem with
he's
rainbow.
George Lucas then.
What?
Lucas then.
Right. Well, you know, quality is fine. Well, and let's not go that far. He's not all George Lucas, but the quality is fine. but there needs to be substance behind it. The people got to be able to act. There's got to have some decent pacing in the story. Just having, you know, pretty shots chained together is not enough to make a film these days. You can't, you know, effects won't sell it anymore. You have to be able to do all of this stuff together. And so, yes, I always like diversity in the story. And it's a good point. I don't remember this many Indian folks being in a modern fantasy sci-fi film, which is great. I don't have a problem with that. But wouldn't it have been better if the movie was better, though? Wow, it's great to see an Indian cast in a movie that people like, you know, as opposed to, wow, yeah, there were some Indians in it. No, you want it to be a complete kind of thing.
I guess, am I trying too hard to like this movie? Am I trying too hard to I want...
In isolation, when you watch the previews of Airbender...
Well, they didn't even have the preview scene in the one that... We saw the previews where he was up in some massive thing and the fire ships was coming and he was in a circle. Was that scene even in the movie?
I think it was, but it was, well, I think it was pieces of different scenes that were put together in the preview. So I'm pretty sure those parts were scattered throughout the film.
Maybe I went to a restroom on that part or something. I don't know.
So my question is, well, whoever these people are that are cutting together the film commercials from these films, why can't they edit the films? Because when you look at the preview, seriously, it had the sense of scope and the motion of the fighting was good and all of that stuff, it felt a little bit faster. And then when you're watching the movie, again,
it's like, kill me now. Would you stop dancing and kill me?
It was so slow. It was, and again, they would dance for 15 minutes, and then the effect wasn't even that great.
Wasn't when he tried to free the earthbenders? Wasn't that a little painful to watch? Because it was like, what are you doing here? It was cool when they started, but to get them to do it, it wasn't believable. I didn't believe that he was freeing people, and then he went on this montage of freeing Earth people where he was just running down like farmers markets and stalls and stuff, doing his little, you know, hulu dancing and all this. And
even if they had physically
choreographed.
If they had just sped up the film, it would have. It was so slow, and it wasn't even like wire work. He was literally just running along and at human speeds. Like there was that movie where you like ran up some stairs and then into a window someplace, and it was totally not regular gravity, no wire work. It was just like some kid from, you know, from the mall,
Dallas, Texas.
Run up the stairs,
yeah.
And cut across. It was just is no one watching it while they're making these films? How can you sit there with millions of dollars at stake and put something together like that and go...
Well, I think he had people that were no men or rational men, but right, didn't we read that he, like, a lot of those people quit at the beginning? And so all that's left after people was like, we need this to be quality was, I guess, yes men. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So the thing about this movie and the thing about most M. Night movies... There were images in this movie that were actually very powerful. There were certain shots that if you take out the dialogue, you take out the motion, you take out the context in the story or any emotion, and just the way they looked were well done, well constructed. Just little moments, and they would glimmer every once in a while you're watching it. But then to be barraged with the stiffness of episode one dialogue.
I like that.
episode. And didn't it feel like Anakin Skywalker? Didn't that guy remind you of Anakin?
Oh, man.
When he starts macking on the princess, I was like, come on. Where's his hand going to get cut off? It was just the same.
Oh, man.
But
yeah, that's wow. Oh,
and
wow.
And you don't want to be channeling Anakin, all right? Just, you know.
Yeah, why would you do that? It was totally that. Oh my god, it was.
Didn't it feel like? And so wow. I'm going. How does no one?
I was thinking baby Anakin on Aang. And then like Christian Hayden or whatever his name is with the Soka or whatever. Yeah. Soka and then Princess. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it had just the same amount of passion as they had in episode one.
At least Princess Amidala, she was trying. She was, bless her heart.
Yeah, yeah. She had some talent. She had some talent. My other problem is I want to just rail against this film. I want to explode with a vengeance of just
why. Hate.
But the problem is I just don't care. I can't even muster the fire to bring this stuff down on Airbender because one, we kind of knew what we were getting into going into this. Our expectations.
Well, I thought it was more impressive than some of the crap that he's been put. Like what was the one where like air was killing people without a bender? What was that last movie?
The Crappening.
That crap.
If you're talking about The Happening,
yes.
That wasn't when it was plants killing people, remember?
Oh, I forgot.
It was the trees. Oh, that was awful.
But this was much.
How can you say this is better?
It was prettier and it had the mythos was interesting because you had earth, wind, and fire, and air, and then. And I guess the actual cartoon and the mythos from that it shined through because it's something that, you know, you want to relate to. And wouldn't it be cool to be able to have a power and you can bend in water and, you know, who are these people? The you know, where do they come from? How does the story go? But it's so bogged down with the M. Night mess that, you know, I don't think people are going to get the opportunity to see it, you know, they're just going to have to go straight to the animated series.
Here's the other thing, though. If you're going to adapt an animated series to a movie, you have got to match, not just the pacing, but the vibrant, super movements of what the anime was. Even when the Matrix came out, it was clear that they were borrowing elements from anime, especially things like Akira and some of those old school things. Mm-hmm. What made The Matrix so exciting and so revolutionary? One, at the time, it was the first time that live action was able to adapt what we had seen for years and years in anime. All of the kinetics of it, all of the scale and all of the brightness and movement. So if you're going to adapt an animated film, an animated series into a film, minimally you've got to be able to replicate what you saw with the animation.
And the 3D didn't even help?
Not even close. Because if you were going to use the 3D, you've got to have that on top of a well-paced fight scene. on broad,
well, like the bubble water things and the flying bison.
I was more excited with the Abyss. Seriously, don't you? I mean, you remember? Yeah. Why are you bringing up the pseudopod, you know, the aquapod from 1989? This is 2010. I saw that effect before. And really, I mean, that was it. There was nothing more spectacular with the water effects than what they had in the Abyss. And back then it was more revolutionary because we hadn't seen it before. So just to have an extraordinarily slow moving blob of water in 3D.
And a slow moving movie called The Abyss. Oh, I'm going to get hate mail. Just leave me alone. Yeah. I saw it like 6 months ago for the first time, and I just wasn't. I see the value, but I had to be there in the 80s to appreciate it.
But so, again, they missed it. The many opportunities, the adapting it from anime should have meant something, and you got to understand when you do that there's a responsibility to bring that kind of life and energy. And even if it was for kids, which are we copping out with that? Because I thought
that's a cop out.
No, because I was watching And the other eight people in the theater with me were kids. And the only thing that they reacted to, was there was the one moment where the waterbending girl was first trying to throw her water power, and she gets her buddy all sopping wet right there. That one moment, that's the only sound they made throughout the whole film. And they laughed at that, and then and that was it. So are we saying that this is a kids' movie just because it didn't feel like the plot was that complicated? Because I did not see...
Well, it had a bunch of kids in it.
But yeah, is that enough? Is just putting a bunch of kids in it enough to make it a kids' movie? Because I don't think they got a lot out of it. Because I was listening, because I'm sitting there going, well, maybe it's just me. Maybe this is for kids. And so I kind of backed down, and I'm listening for the other folks in the audience. And there was just silence.
I'm doubly screwed because my mom wants to take my niece and nephews to see this thing. That means I'm going to have to sit through it twice. And I don't want to see it again.
Well,
maybe I could see something more. No, I can't. Oh, I don't know. I guess I really want to play devil's advocate, because to me, when a lot of people give one thing a very hard time, you know, either you give it a hard time and everybody agree, like, you know, everybody agrees Nazis are bad. But, wow, I should end the podcast. I compared Air Night to M. Nazis to M. Night. Okay, I'm not, forget that. But, I mean, is everybody just piling on and saying we hate this because, you know, it's not what we expected? Or is everybody giving it a fair chance?
With my expectations low, I went in there trying to find something. And that's why at the beginning I said, this is not the worst movie I've ever seen. It's true. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen. But it was just boring. It was just, which is a big crime when it comes to films. It was boring. And that, like I said, not even enough to make me mad. It wasn't horrible. It was just a sequence of events. Turn-taking dialogue, slow magic tai chi. It just and that was just one thing presented after another on a flashing screen, and that was it. And so I can't hate it more than the fact that it was just boring.
You own this movie?
What are you talking about? What did you say? Will I own this movie?
Yeah.
Heck no. Heck no. No.
The website is cool.
I haven't been to the website.
Well, I had to read up on some stuff.
Maybe they should have just aimed the camera at the website and put that in the theater. Because it just, no.
Yeah, I guess, you know. Is anybody else going to give M. Night money for movies after this?
See, that's the other thing I don't get. M. Night, what are you doing, man? I mean, seriously. You have had so many chances and opportunities. In the past, you have had an artistic expression where you got the money.
It was just the one movie. Vision.
No, what do you mean? No, all of his movies up until now have been his artistic expression, his unique way of telling stories. And those, with the exception of The Sixth Sense, have not done so well. So, okay, now he's got a chance to take a property that's not his own, to show that, okay, I can be a good director, I can put all this stuff together, I can make a film that I assume is more marketable. In the past, he's exercised a sort of creative thing that he was doing before. This time, because he's buying this property, he is trying to do something that's going to be big and marketable. This is like his Hollywood stint. If you're going to do that, what happened? Because why would you take a property that has a certain action element to it that's got a following behind it, and then kind of
crap all over it?
Maybe his artistic spin is not his choice. I mean, really, that's just all he can see. Maybe that's all he can see. Because it would seem like this would be his attempt to change gears, to do something, to show people that he can make something
different.
Well,
maybe he can't do this.
Yeah, well, see, that's what I'm starting to recognize here.
Well, okay, so you will not own this movie. Will you ever see anything get sucked into M. Night's water bubble again?
I am really disappointed. I'm really disappointed because this was kind of like my last try with him. I'm disappointed, really. I really wanted him to do well with this, and I was hoping to see something great from him. And this is just not, it's not it. And this was my chance to let him do something different than what he's been doing in the past. I don't think I'm going to try him again. That's it.
Yeah, he's done. Well, M. Night's done. I'm done with him. Carl's done with him. And we're done with this podcast. Thanks for listening, guys. We love your feedback. Give us a call at 773-336-2686. Send us a tweet at Sci-Fi Party Line. Message us on Facebook.com, Sci-Fi Party Line, or go to SciFiParty.com and leave us a message there. Until next time, we hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye. Tell them bye.
Oh.
You don't have to tell them bye.
I was waiting for you to say goodbye in the Airbender style, and now I am going to say, in a totally natural way, goodbye to the listening audience. We hope you have enjoyed Sci-Fi Party Line. Good night.